Blog Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about something new. A new show called G's Power.
G's Power.
Real talk for real saints.
Are you ready?
And it's for real.
Welcome to G's Power Hour, live every weekday at 11:30 a.m. on Never Had It So Good Entertainment Network. Your host, G, will bring you informative and entertaining guests and a variety of topics in a way that you can absorb and enjoy. Listen in weekdays and call in at 516-387-1944. We love interaction. All shows can be downloaded if you miss one or found on iTunes the next day. G's Power Hour is powered by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network.
G's Power Hour.
Yeah.
Well, good morning, brothers and sisters, kings and queens, angels and saints, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. We are doing a makeup session because there were some technical difficulties last week, and I don't know, it seemed like it was on my end, but I still can't identify where it came from. But God willing, we're going to get through this together, as you know, as we keep saying, with everything. And one of the things that I was interested in is the impact of the COVID-19 virus on Homeland Security. So we have brought back Homeland Security expert Dr. Harvey Wolf Kushner to kind of give us some insight in terms of the impact. Good morning, sir. Thank you for returning. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thank you.
Good, good. I hope you had a blessed Easter.
I certainly did, and I hope you did as well, and all your listeners.
Great, great. Yeah, it was nice, low-key, but nice, and that was fine. So I'm going to bring to you, I'm every now and then get into conspiracy theory mode. So I'm going to bring you one of my theories, and that is that, and I heard it actually, somebody else was talking about it today, that this was a weaponized virus that escaped from it. So is there any indication that this might be a possibility? Is there talk of this? What do you know?
Well, look, whenever you have some type of event, especially something like this, a pandemic or a terrorist event, there's always 9/11, as you know, there's always discussion about conspiracies and all sorts of things. And, you know, nothing is really ever removed from the table. Everything is looked at, certainly by our intelligence agencies and our government. But with this particular incident, I've heard things, and I'm sure you said you have too, about this. And look, there's always that possibility. But right now, it just seems that, this is an issue that occurred. Whether or not it was purposely done, I don't have any information about that. I could just tell you what I've heard, in terms of where it started and how it might have started. There is all sorts of reports. As you know, it started in Wuhan, China, and the president got into a lot of trouble when he called it the Wuhan virus. Quite frankly, historically, when you look at these pandemics, oftentimes they're given the name as to where they first began. We had that with rubella, which didn't happen in Germany, so they called it the German measles. And certainly SARS started in China, and swine flu, and so Wuhan virus. Now, there have been indications that there is a laboratory very close to where the Wuhan wet market, where people thought it occurred, where they do have experimentation on all sorts of viruses. For example, the coronavirus has been with us before. There's all different types of strains. This one, COVID-19, is one that we hadn't seen before. But the coronavirus, because it's sort of shaped like a corona or a crown, as you see pictures of it, as it's been called, has been made and stimulated in laboratories, certainly in China. And the Chinese have been known to experiment with all sorts of viruses, whether or not it's going to be used for germ warfare or whatever. But in terms of was it something that was weaponized and unleashed, you know, I can't say it has been. I could just report to you what others think it has been. But there seems to be indication that it did start in that area, and whether or not, and the scientists are not clear as to how the virus began. You know, there was talk that it came from the wild game that is in these wet markets that sold throughout China, and that mm-hmm. it sprung from that and then hit into, you know, to a human, so forth and so on. So, again, you know, only science is going to tell us this. You know, we did see a report most recently, you might have saw that, that a tiger in the Bronx Zoo in New York and some of the other tigers in that area was infected by it because the keeper himself had the virus and he passed it on to the tiger. The tigers, I believe, since they had a dry cough, they had all the symptoms of COVID-19, but they've since gotten better. So there is some talk that it can be transmitted from a human to an animal. And then there's science is out whether or not it come from. But getting back to your initial question, whether or not it was weaponized and, you know, something that went haywire, you know, good as mine. But there is no real evidence now by our intelligence agencies, at least that is made public, that in fact it was weaponized.
Okay. So what one of my other questions, I guess, is this has impacted the task of Homeland Security, keeping our borders safe in a variety of ways. Mm-hmm. One, I suspect, is with the people flying in from different countries from the airlines. I mean, you may ban somebody from one area, but that doesn't mean that they can't go to another area and then come into the U.S. Were we having any problems with that?
Well, yeah, certainly. You know, it is a problem in terms of who comes into this country because of, you know, what kind of passport they have, where the entry point is. You know, that preceded, you know, the COVID pandemic. So that is an issue, and that's something that we need to address. We certainly need to address before that. But right now, you know, there's less of a chance because certainly there's less flow in and out of our country. I mean, our airports are pretty decimated. TSA has, you know, pretty much 90-95% of their workload is gone. I mean, people are not traveling by air. There seems to be a lockdown both here and overseas, and this should go into the you know, foreseeable future. If you could hearken back to 9/11, after 9/11, it took some time for aviation industry to go back to normal, and I assume now this is really going to be an issue. How you know, will people fly? You know, what is the appropriate social distancing and that? But again. Initial question, there is issue about people coming in, what passports they hold, and where they come from.
Is there any indication in terms of, any solid indication at this point, because I know things have been fluid, in terms of the main entry point or points for this disease into the United States?
Well, you know, initially, you know, we shut down. You know, the president did early on between the travel between China, except for American citizens coming back, and that became an issue. Right now, that's pretty much under control. What'll happen in the future? I your guess is as good as mine. But then again, you know, with this invisible enemy that we face, you know, it's until we have the appropriate testing and the vaccines. You know, someone could come in with now symptom-free and, you know, spread it. This is something that needs to be worked out. And you know, this is unprecedented. We never had an issue like this. And certainly, you know, TSA and our government had an issue with people smuggling things onto an airplane. you know, whether it was a bomb. And so we put in protocols to deal with certain size objects and, you know, liquids that couldn't be carried on. But now, well, let's face it, that this is something that's carried on by an individual, which unless they're tested, we can't tell. So, you know, it's going to be difficult to get everything back as it was before, you know, until we have the appropriate way of testing this. I don't foresee any normalcy, normality, call it what you want, till about a year, year and a half, until we get a vaccine. I don't see how we could go back to the way we traveled before, and you know, even the way we protect the public, because it's a hidden enemy. It's like nothing we've ever faced before. You know, when we went from into fighting terrorists who were, you know, what we call asymmetrical warfare. They didn't wear a uniform, and they blended in with everyone else. That was difficult for us to challenge and take on. But now, with a virus, you know, this is the worst case scenario in trying to protect the public. Wish I had better. Go ahead, Commissioner.
I was curious because also it seems like some of our treatment and protective measures we're having to depend on other countries for now in terms of making a mask, making a ventilator, even though we've stepped up here. Is there any type of concern that we should have about securing these types of items and any types of goods and services at this time from any other countries right now, or especially China or any other countries in particular?
Well, you bet. That's the most important issue. That's something that I've been raising for years, our dependency on foreign entities for our national security. And just let's take a look at the healthcare field. We've allowed, you know, go into your medicine cabinet, those of you listening, pick up anything, you know, whether it's toothpaste, whether it's a mouthwash, whether it's particularly any kind of a drug, you'll see it's not made in this country. Now, you know, it's made in areas, you know, and certainly in Ireland and Belgium and Austria and Germany. That's okay. But in China, that becomes a problem. And look here, when you talk about weaponizing this virus, they were weaponizing our antibiotics. You know, they threatened us right after this that they would stop the flow of antibiotics. And almost 90%, 95% of all our antibiotics come from China in one way or the other. That's serious. That has to change. We can't allow that to happen. You know, you want to rely on, for example, a silk scarf or a pair of shoes or some trousers. Okay, look, I have a problem with that, but certainly pharmaceuticals, big pharma, allowing China to produce almost all of our antibiotics, that needs to stop immediately. And that goes for whether it's an N95 mask or whether it's the ventilators themselves. Our whole healthcare industry now has been farmed out to China. And you talk about weaponizing, they threatened us, whether they threaten us economically or whether they weaponize a virus and send it here. We have to have these types of products made in the United States. And that's just beginning in terms of talking about big pharma. If you take a look at our military-industrial complex, let me just float something out to you. After World War II, and certainly throughout the 50s and 60s, the United States was the major producer of steel in the world. We exported steel to all over the world. Now we import our steel. China makes almost 7 times the amount of steel that we do, and they supply approximately 50-60% of the world's steel comes from there. That steel goes into our military. It goes into our weapons. So that's just when you talk about steel. Then you talk about parts, parts for our airplanes, parts for our tanks. You know, we rely on China and other countries, and this is disastrous for our national security. So it's not just the medical field. It's the military-industrial field. and it's the airline industry. You know, that's where you have the competition between the Europe and the United States, between the Airbus and Boeing. And certainly the selling off of American industry to foreign entities. For example, the great American icon Budweiser Beer. That's not an American company. Budweiser Beer is owned by InBev, which is a conglomerate of Belgium. It's Stella Artois Beer owns Budweiser. So, you know, answer to your question, it's a very, very serious situation in which we've allowed our industrial capability for our own protection, whether it be the home front for military or whether it be for our hospitals, which need masks, which need ventilators, which need antibiotics. We've allowed that to go to a foreign entity such as China, who, I hate to say this, for those of you listening out there, they're not our friend. They're our enemy. They're our enemy, whether it's in the military, and they have ambitions of being the number one military power, or whether it's economically. They own us. We owe them trillions of dollars. If it was up to me, I would charge them the $1 trillion that they caused with this pandemic by not reporting it early enough, try to cover it up, and weaponizing it, not necessarily in the sense of putting it out there, but weaponizing it by not telling the world what was happening. And then you raise another issue. They're in cahoots with the World Health Organization and China. So these are serious issues which we need to tackle.
We are here talking to Dr. Harvey Wolf Kushner, who is the Director of Homeland Security and Terrorism Institute. He's also the Chairman of the Criminal Justice and Cybersecurity for Long Island University. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. We're going to take a break, and if you have questions when we come back, the number is 516-387-1944. That is 516-387-1944, and we'll be right back.
Over the past 60 years, Dove Beauty Bar's superior formula has remained unchanged. But when it comes to beauty, everything changed. Together, we redefined beauty. We said no to stereotypes and yes to every type. We let go of judgments and embraced what makes us unique. We're proud to have been there with you, caring for you every step of the way. Here's to the next 60 years.
Hi, I'm Tim Garrison. You may know me as Timmy G. Yeah, I know. It's been 2 decades, but I want you to know I'm back in the art with you. And I've got a mix of music that can help you relax and chill out. It's smooth. It's relaxing. It's chill out jazz. The soulful mix of smooth jazz, soul, and smooth R&B. So join me every Wednesday night, 10 p.m. to midnight, on K-Ham Radio.
Are you chilling?
Good morning. Welcome back to G's Power Hour. I Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. We are here doing a makeup session because we had technical difficulties last week with Dr. Harvey Wolf Kushner, who is the Director of Homeland Security and Terrorism at Long Island University, and he's also the Chairman of Criminal Justice and Cybersecurity. So I wanted to find out, because you were talking about various ways this puts an attack in terms of our dealing with China. I have a couple of spinoff questions from that. One, doesn't that also, when we rely too much on China or any other entity for that matter, isn't that an attack in a different way on our economy? That's one of my questions. And then the other question is, we have a lot of students, not just from China, but other, as we happen to know when we had 9/11, we had students that were going to flight school, even right here where I am in Florida, that ended up being the attackers on some of the planes for 9/11. And so when we try to be free, we try to encourage that freedom and stuff, but at the same time, how do we strike a balance in terms of letting people in? Because isn't that a way of letting them know more about our society and how we function, and so on and so forth?
Well, you know, you raise a very important question, and thank you for it because it relates to what I've been talking about. We have a major problem with China and with Russia and with North Korea and with Iran. Let's just take the first two, Russia and China. Both of them challenge us, and certainly Iran and North Korea do as well. But right now, let's just take a look at that in relation to the question you asked. We've allowed so many Chinese students to come into this country to go to our universities, and we have many professors that are from China teaching at our universities. There have been numerous cases over the years of these professors and students taking our intellectual property, stealing it, and bringing it back to China. The government has indicted so many individuals, one recently out in California at a university there, UCLA, which never makes the press because the media is so to the left in this country that you cannot raise any issue about the Chinese invasion of our universities and of our industry. And our intelligence agencies are aware of this. Now, look, I'm not saying that everyone studying here is problematic. There is enough that are put in here to steal our secrets and to infiltrate our society. Certainly, China is a closed society. And as you know, someone coming from China to study here in the United States is vetted on that side. They just don't get out of there unless the government speaks to them. And so you know the stories that we have of items that are made in China, electronic items, which are then mined with, information that they steal from us. They've been stealing our trade secrets, whether it's in terms of military or whether it's in terms of just cellular technology for our iPhones and things like that. So that is really a dangerous situation which we have. And the Chinese come, they infiltrate our universities, and it's not just for a week or a day. They infiltrate it possibly for 5-10 years. And this has been going on until now. Until now, this president has started to take a look at this very closely about how this information is being stolen here. And the Chinese are very astute at that. For example, just recently, when all our universities, including mine, had to go online, they needed a new platform to teach our students. And so a lot of people were using Zoom. You've probably heard of that. But then it was admitted that Zoom operates inside of China. So a lot of the lectures, a lot of the videos, the audios that were taking place here in this country were filtered through China, actually. And when they're filtered through China, the Chinese government gets a hold of whatever it is because it's a closed society. Our media doesn't want to touch this. I mean, China violates every human rights things. They now have a couple of million Muslim Chinese. They're trying to have them in internment camps in China, trying to reprogram them. So, it's well known what type of a society China is. The concern is that they're here. They've given money to colleges, and they start these Confucius organizations. These are spy networks inside the United States. Now, that's just China. The Russians are doing the same thing. What's interesting is the Russians are more interested in our military-industrial complex to steal those secrets, where the Chinese are stealing our intellectual property. If you look at even the telecommunication systems in China, all mirror images of our property here that was stolen intellectually. So, this is a very, very serious situation that we have with China. They're not our friends. They seek to compete with us globally, militarily. They've infiltrated, for example, the World Health Organization. Think about this. The media doesn't touch this. The World Health Organization, who is in charge of that? It's someone from Ethiopia, Dr. Tedros. Now, if you look in Africa, the Chinese are all over Africa. They control most of Africa. And where do they have the most control? In Ethiopia. So when you think about it, you know, they've set it up with Ethiopia and the World Health Organization. That's why the World Health Organization was late to the party in announcing the COVID issue. And there was no discussion of that. And when you think about it, the president is going to make a statement on that. We give almost $500 million in support for the World Health Organization. And they're not our friends. They squashed the COVID-19 virus spread. Yes.
But Dr. Kushner, isn't some of this of our own making? And the reason I say that, we have alienated ourselves in different areas, or not been attentive enough. Africa is one of those areas. You know,
absolutely.
We don't really pay attention to what's going on over there and how we can have mutually beneficial relationships over there.
Absolutely.
So, and it seems like, and I could be wrong, but it seems like since this administration, we've continued to alienate the people who were once considered our allies. Now, I'm not saying that some of these things, some of the organizations that we've been a part of could not, our relations could not have been restructured, but I think the way it's been handled has created some alienation. So isn't this something of our own making?
Oh, 100%. And every administration up until now, and I'm not saying this administration is doing a perfect job either, but every administration, whether you go back to, you know, far back as Reagan, if you certainly go back to the Clinton and both Bushes and Obama administration, they've neglected certain regions of the world, certainly Africa for one. That's a conversation that needs to take place. That's a growing area of the world, certainly with population. And in the 21st century, it will have more say in terms of resources. China's all over that continent. So is the Russians. We're not engaged there. We're not engaged in Africa at all. We have no inroads there in terms. Yes, we give certain aid. Yes, we give humanitarian. We give certain help. But we haven't looked at it as a growing region for, you know, industry, for development. We've looked at it sort of a third world or fourth world. We haven't paid attention. There's a lot of conflict within the continent as well. But again, China has the foresight, and they've been involved, as I said, in Ethiopia and other areas there, and we're so way behind. So yes, it is certainly our doing. And it's also, when it comes to China, if you take a look at big industries here, who went to China because of cheap labor and because of different restrictions. We're trying to roll some of that back. A lot of our companies were restricted from developing things because of certain ecological and certain restrictions that were put in place, which have been lifted in this administration. So a lot of industry moved outside of this country. Hey, you take Amtrak or you take any train and you get on that train, you'll pass by areas of this country, like the Rust Belt, where factories are no longer in operation. We don't have that. We moved that outside of the country. Our manufacturing has moved out, certainly to China and to other areas of the world. So, you're right. It's been our doing. We didn't have the foresight to plan on this. And a lot of it's now coming to bite us because we didn't pay attention to it. And certainly we've been, you know, supporting the world to a great extent, whether it's, you know, look at NATO. We've been picking up the tabs for years. Now, I'm not saying that we shouldn't do something, but they needed to kick in more, you know, and certainly our allies pay us lip service for a lot of things that they take for granted. Take Germany, for example. When the president said to Merkel, listen, why are you buying your oil and your gas from Russia, you know? Again, it's very complex, but, you know, right now, a lot of this is coming to haunt us, but I'm hopeful that in the future we're going to realize this and we're going to bring back certain things that are necessary to our national security, whether it be our health, whether it be our military, or whether it be our industrial complex for jobs And things, you know, I'm not saying everything needs to be made in the United States, but certainly, you know, certain things that are necessary, such as our power grids, our parts for our power grids, certainly ventilators, certainly equipment in a hospital, certainly a personal protection equipment, you know, that's so needed for our doctors and our nurses. This needs to be something that we really have to take control of as we move forward.
We are here with Hollywood Cook. Because I got so many questions right now, but we're going to take a break. I'm here with Harvey Wolf Kushner, who is the director of Homeland Security and Terrorism Institute at Long Island University, also the chairman of Criminal Justice and Cybersecurity. He's also an author. So if you have questions when we come back, the number is 516-387-1944. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment, and we will be right back.
Having a wedding, reception, family reunion, planning a banquet, or some other fundraising event. Need to share your knowledge through a workshop or seminar, or it's a difficult time and you need to plan a wake or repast. Let us help. At our gatherings, let us reduce the stress and make the occasion memorable, treasured. Call our gatherings at 407-968-9387 or email ourgatherings@yahoo.com. Let us help plan your special event.
This is Douglas Dobbs of Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service. We have served the Central Florida community for 29 years with quality funeral and cremation services. Honoring all religions and faiths, we have been here for many grieving families. Whether it's a complete funeral service with a burial or a simple, dignified cremation, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service is here for you. Located at 430 North Kirkman Road at the 408 Expressway, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service, 407-578-7720. Dobbs. Dedicated to serving our families.
Good afternoon, and welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G, and thank you for taking the time out to be with us this afternoon. We also thank Harvey Wolf Kushner, who is with us now. He is with the Homeland Security and Terrorism Institute at Long Island University. And while we are kind of sidelined, so to speak, Dr. Kushner, in terms of business as usual, isn't this a good time to take a look and do some reflecting on, in terms of how we can maybe, I guess, not necessarily, there's no way to eliminate it. Something else is going to happen, whether it's a pandemic or a terrorism attack or whatever. But when we have these times and we have to kind of stop what we're doing, isn't this a time to figure out how we can do some things better? And for example, I'm going to go into our education system a little bit, because I remember when I was in school and I took French, and, you know, and it was an elective. It wasn't, you know, and it was, I think there was, when you got into high school or even in junior high, there was like one class that was mandatory. It wasn't that mandatory that you took a bunch of courses. But I remember we had an exchange student from Germany. And not only did she know English, she knew German, of course. She knew Italian. She knew French. She knew at least four different other languages, which when, you know, when we all became adults, that put her ahead of the game in terms of, you know, having relations in this global economy. Are we not falling short when we don't make it mandatory? Because we look at other countries and say they are too harsh on their children. But isn't it making our children better adults if we insist that they, some of these language courses or learn some of these other skills or, you know, aren't we doing some harm to ourselves here?
Well, you know, you raise an interesting question. You know, in most universities, language was required for a variety of different majors. Whether it was in the
I'm not even talking about university. I'm talking about elementary.
Well, right. let me just go work top down. Colleges today don't require a language. Now you get down to our schools, K through 12 and others. Yes, there's a lack of influence. You know, language being taught. And, you know, it's from a specific reason for that. If you look at the United States, we're surrounded by two basically friendly countries, Canada on the north, which is really a suburb of this country, and Mexico, okay? And the language is Spanish. And then you have the Atlantic and Pacific. When you go to Europe, it's rather small. So you take a country like Belgium, you know, where kids will be speaking French, Flemish, you know, German. Any European country, there are 3, 4, 5, 6 different languages because of proximity. And also it's being taught. So that's something that we never had in this country. But at least you're talking about, you know, your era and certainly my era where there was more of a push for that language. And, yes, you do lose something. But it's not just language. It's our whole educational system has fallen apart. You know, if you look at industrial nations worldwide, the top 30, and you look at how we score in terms of our language skills, in terms of our English skills, in terms of our, you know, verbal, in terms of our math, in terms of all of these, you will note that the United States 30, 40, 50 years ago came out on the top on all these scores. Today, when you look for math scores, you look for, you know, verbal, we're near the bottom, if not the bottom. We come out 28, 29th. And it's not just in terms of education, it's in terms of other things, infant mortality, a lot of other things. But sticking to, you know, what you asked, we've fallen behind because our educational system in this country is antiquated. It hasn't kept up. You know, in comparison to other countries, like, for example, Finland. Finland mm-hmm. usually tests number one on all these scores. And if you look at how school operates there, you know, it less hours, much less homework, but yet the students perform better. That could be a function also of homogeneity. It's a more homogeneous society than ours. You know, the way we've trained teachers, we moved away from, you know, when I was in school, and I think probably when you were in school, the teacher, you know, lectured for the good part of an hour. And, you know, there was a lot of rote memory. Today, when you go into schools, you know, the emphasis is on what does the student think. And so for a 40, 50-minute class in high school or in second grade, third grade, it's like 70 to 80% of it is feeling what the student wants in that. It's not a direct lecture. So, you know, we really need to think, really rethink our educational system because we're so far behind. You know, I can't speak necessarily my grandkids. I see with them. But I see at the university, it's horrendous. It's horrendous.
Right.
Whenever we have foreign students, they so far outpace our students. It's like night and day. And I'll tell you something funny, though. And speaking to a couple of people who are Europeans who were professors there, it's interesting. They say, you know, when you see groups of students throughout Europe, you know, whatever country they're from, they're very good in math. They're excellent in, you know, all these skills. But you know what the American students are, you know, excel in? Talking. Their ability to, you know, to communicate that way. You know, that's something that we see here in our culture. So we've failed. We failed all our communities in our society, you know. And it's not a question of the person's ethnicity. It's also a function of what's at home, too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we trust the teacher for so many hours a day, but it's also, you know, the type of relationship the child has at home with whether it's a two family or whether it's a father and a mother or whether it's a single parent. You know, it's that failure too, you know, to communicate and to.
Before we go too much further, I do want to get back to the language thing, and the reason is. For example, we have, we still have a long way to go, but we have placed more energy on or emphasis on STEM, you know, and on the
right.
science and on
yeah.
the math and technology and everything we have.
Yeah.
The languages
yeah.
concern me because when we need to let's say, translate intelligence from other countries, instead of possibly hiring an American that's proficient in another language, we end up having to hire someone from another country who's proficient in that language. And for me, I mean, hopefully there's nothing wrong with it, but I'm looking at, unfortunately, I'm looking at worst case scenarios. You're relying on someone from a country that you're trying to get information from about that country to give us the right information versus relying on someone who has been taught, who has learned that particular language to pick up on what's going on. You understand what I'm saying?
No, you're absolutely right. I've experienced that certainly, you know, in the intelligence that I've gotten from the Middle East in which I needed an interpreter. But, you know, getting back to that, there's two sides to that. One, you know, it's one thing if you speak a certain language, take Arabic. It's another thing depending upon the country that you come from, you know, as a native speaker, because, you know, certain words remain the same, but certain idiomatic expressions, you know, tend to be different and so forth and so on. But you know, I hear your point, and I think we moved away from, you know, looking at language as important. I know this because I know the emphasis, you're 100% right, on STEM, on science and technology. And one of the faults that we face and why it's difficult for, you know, the topic you're bringing up is as we move into a more technologically sophisticated society, and we have, you know, more than any other time on the face of the earth, man is now into this burgeoning growth of technology. You know, certainly, you know, when it comes to cyber, you know, you have one type of cyber event, and then within the next day, it all changes. You know, it's like when someone infects your computer, the next day there's new malware and so forth and so on. So technology is growing at an exponential rate. As it's doing that, it's actually pushing the world towards a one language. And the language of technology, believe it or not, I know you do, is English. And so not only did Microsoft, when the computers came out, everybody needed to speak English, and it's becoming more so today. So we're tending to lose that, and certainly you're right. With the emphasis on STEM, the emphasis is now more on English, because English is really the language of Microsoft, it's the language of Apple, it's the language of, you know, that particular technology. So there's a movement away from you know, different languages. But no, you raised a very important point. When you have people doing very, shall we say, necessary work in intelligence gathering, of course it would be better if you had someone. No, this is not to say that someone who's born in a foreign country comes here and adapts to our way, certainly is welcome. Because, look, we are all here, not Native Americans, very few Native Americans, most of us, have come here either by choice or, you know, brought hundreds of years ago. So we're all, you know, guests in this country. But, you know, I do think you're absolutely right. I think language is valuable, and I think there is certainly is a movement away. So I think it's not only because it's not popular, but I think you hit the nail on the head. It's because the emphasis on STEM has moved us away from the humanities, you know, language, philosophy, all of these arts. And you know what? This movement now, which is interesting, this movement now away from face-to-face education for the time being to an online education, as you know, is happening at colleges and K-12, will even push the envelope further into an online world, because it was moving slowly, you know, in certain areas. Like, for example, take medicine. You know, medicine, you had a cadaver. Now they have virtual cadavers where, you know, it's virtual. It's not, you're not working with a human. You're working with this virtual 3D dimensional cadaver. At the University of Las Vegas, they have in their medical school, they have these sort of giant iPads that the students work on dissecting cadavers. So you're seeing it in engineering, in digital engineering. You're seeing Stanford, MIT, developing online digital engineering programs. And we're going to be moving more and more, even in the humanities, more and more into this online platform, you know, and that is going to move us more into technology and more away from the type of face-to-face human communication. Look, during the Middle Ages, you had the Black Plague, and it killed between 75 to 125 million people worldwide. It changed the way the world did business. Culture changed. Economics changed. And that brought about the Italian Renaissance. And so from that pandemic, we had the Italian Renaissance. I'm really going to suggest this, that COVID-19 is going to bring about a renaissance in technology, in education, in the way we do business, which is going to change the world forever. And this is going to be, I think, an unintended consequence of the COVID-19. And I'm hoping that it will be positive in terms of that. This is going to be a monumental change. It's going to affect every part of our society. And you know what? I think it's going to wake us up here in this country, getting back to your original question with China. Mm-hmm. I think people are now going to realize we cannot allow 95% of our antibiotics to be made in China. We need to be made here, you know, mm-hmm. ventilators,
that can happen.
All of these things, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I think we're
Yeah, okay, I was shocked. I was truly shocked to hear that. I had no idea, did not realize that. But we're going to talk about that and some other stuff when we come back. I hate that we only have a few minutes left when we come back, but we're going to do it. We are here with Dr. Harvey Wolf Kushner, talking Homeland Security and the COVID-19 virus. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. Taking a quick break. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Gretchen Dimp Simmons with Farrell Realty, but you know me as G from G's Power Hour. Much of the time when I'm not engaging with you on my show, I'm dealing in real estate in beautiful Central Florida. But because I'm here, that doesn't mean I can't help you wherever you are. So if you're looking to buy, invest, relocate, rent, or sell, please give me a call at 407-968-9387. That's 407-968-9387, and let me help you with your real estate needs.
Hi, I'm Tim Garrison, and I think I found a way to help you understand what is Chill Out Jazz.
Some of y'all may be confused because of the style we choose. We make jazz and R&B. We don't categorize. We just make what sound good, baby.
Is it jazz?
It is what it is.
Is it R&B?
Tune in every Wednesday night at 10 on K-Ham Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. Here with Dr. Harvey Wolf Kushner, author and also director of Homeland Security and Terrorism Institute at Long Island University, also chairman of the Criminal Justice and Cybersecurity Department. And I'm going to say one other thing about language, and I'm going to move on, and because the other thing I've noticed, too, here in Florida, our population, especially in Central Florida, South Florida, very, very diverse. But one of the things that I have noticed is that the older adults that come from a lot of these other countries come here, and they are allowing their native language from where they come from to slip. When it comes to teaching the younger, making sure that the younger kids know English in school. So there, I've run into so many people that say, well, you know, I know enough Spanish or I know enough Creole to communicate with my grandmother. And then, but you know, I really just know English, you know. And so that is also not being handed down. So some of these people who are becoming valuable citizens here or are valuable citizens have also lost the capacity to communicate with people from where they originally come from, which, you know, I think that puts us at a disadvantage as well.
Well, yeah, it certainly does. And I think language is important because it develops you culturally, and you want to have a tie to your past. But again, I think a lot of this has to do with the technologies that are being developed, and people are just moving away from basic communication. And but that's something that I think is a negative of the technology. Also, you know, it has all sorts of impacts on our bodies, on our physical being. You know, there's talk that, you know, I've seen a drawing of what a child would look like in 30, 40, 50 years if everybody continues to be playing on their video games,
right,
over in screen, or holding their phone. I'm sure you've seen some of this, holding your phone next to your ear and develop sort of like almost like a little horn that has come out over the year.
Right.
From pressing the phone. So, you know, there's a lot of physical attributes that technology, you know, because you look at our body. If you go to any museum where they show, for example, a body armor that people wore in the 13th, 14th century, you'll see that it's only about 5 feet, 4 inches in height, because that was the average height. We've gotten taller, we've gotten wider, you know, and we're morphing too. So not only is our technology, but our whole very being is changing. And certainly what we fill our brain with, and that is, you know, we're moving towards STEM, which is needed, but also what you raised initially, languages and culture and art and all of that is also important for the body as well.
Okay, so let's. What I originally, I guess, wanted to talk to you about the subject is in terms of the threat of COVID-19 and its impact on homeland security for us. What type of things do we need to be looking out for right now? What things should we? What types of things need to change? What's the biggest threat?
Well, you know, one of the things is everybody's so focused in now on COVID-19 and that, and we've heard reports that if you look at cities like New York, where we're located, it's something like out of a sci-fi movie. I've never seen anything like this, where you look at Times Square, which is sort of the crossroads of the world. There's no people, there's no automobiles, the streets are empty here. Doesn't mean that some of the threats that existed before by terrorist organizations don't exist. I think right now they are looking for what's the next stage. You know, it's interesting. If you look at Saudi Arabia, was having a war inside of Yemen, and sort of a truce has occurred because both sides are facing COVID, so they're dealing with that. So we can't let our guard down in terms of, you know, the threats that we face from terrorist organizations worldwide or from, you know, that in fact, China or Russia or North Korea or Iran. You know, the president just recently warned that, you know, we might be going through something, but don't test us. In fact, I saw something today. When I get off, I'll look further. I heard that North Korea has fired a whole bunch of missiles down in the area in there. South Korea is reporting that. So, you know, everything is still out there. You know, it hasn't changed. This will probably change things as we move forward because of this enemy that we're all fighting against. But if you, look in terms of our military, there's some serious issues now with COVID-19 and how we stop that from spreading in our fighting forces and even our intelligence agency. A lot of people in Homeland Security, whether it's on the border, also are coming down with this. So this is a big issue. One of the things that we're lucky is that it's, in a sense, it's affected the whole world. So everyone is you know, has to lay back. But the threat levels that we faced before us, you know, still exist. And once we get I'm sure eventually we're going to get a handle on this. I don't see it coming in the next 2-3 months, but I'm sure we're going to have a vaccine. And I'm sure, you know, we're going to get people inoculated. And I'm sure we're going to be able to go back to, you know, somewhat business as usual. You know, maybe we won't shake hands or hug each other, but certainly maybe you know, we'll do fist bumps and just wave at someone. But, you know, all the issues that existed before where we're at risk from those who would want to attack us still are out there. You know, they haven't changed. They've just been put in abeyance. And this is even true in terms of just, you know, normal crime rates and stuff. You've been hearing reports about crime going down. You know, and you always have this during these types of things, whether it's 9/11, whether it's with Sandy, or whether it's some kind of hurricane. There always is a, you know, a lull in things, and things shake out differently, you know. But I'm sure, you know, things are going to go back to business as usual, whether it's crime or whether it's the terrorist threat. This is not gonna end it. It's just, you know, it's postponed it while everybody is dealing with COVID 19.
Wow, I think one of the things that might change though is everybody's becoming so much more knowledgeable now in terms of how to use the computer and various programs and technology and stuff. Do you see maybe a possibility in the rise of cybercrime?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In fact, there's a rise in it right now, certainly right now, because people are at home, and certainly, you know, there are many more robocalls and scams like that, absolutely. You know, cybercrime will absolutely, that's the crime of the future. It certainly will increase. You know, whether it's someone in his or her basement in this country or halfway around the world, or whether it's the North Koreans, the Iranians, or the Russians or the Chinese who have attacked our systems. We've been attacked by all of them, you know, going back to the big attacks in 2014 when, you know, we had an attack when Sony put out a film which was not favorable to the Koreans, the North Koreans. They threatened that if Sony puts it out, they will hack their computers, and Sony put out the picture, and they got hacked. And then the Iranians hacked the casinos in Vegas. So, you know, the Russians hacked our, you know, economic system. So, you know, cybercrime will increase, and it has increased as we speak, because people are indoors and they're more online, you know, and so the vulnerabilities, you know, increase as well. This is not going to change. That's the new crime wave that we haven't been able to control is cybercrime.
Okay, so we got a couple minutes left, less than a couple minutes left. So what is, I guess, the best way toward a solution in terms of keeping our country safe at this time, and especially when we, open back up for business? Are we to become more self-reliant and self-sufficient, or are we to become more globally interactive, or how do you balance the two?
That's the $64,000 question. Look, once the toothpaste is out of the tube, it's very hard to put it in and shape the way it was in the beginning. And so globalization is here to stay. But I think there has to be a realization that, yes, there is globalization. We are one world. But I think what we need to do is understand that when it comes to certain things, whether it's our public health, whether it's a military, our defense, whether it's our educational system, whether it's an intellectual property, we have to have much more control of that. You know, it's nice to all of us to get together and sing kumbaya, but we need to have borders. We do lock our cars at night. We do close our doors in the evening. We shut our windows. We put our alarm systems on. We live that way in this country. We need to secure our borders. We need to secure our intellectual property, and we need to have the wherewithal. Things like this occur, we have the ability to protect our first line responders, our hospitals. We have to have the medications made here. You know, I don't mind if we, through altruism, support, give to the world, but I think we need to take care of everything here in this country first.
And Dr. Harvey Wolf-Kushner, thank you. Thank you for coming back. Appreciate it always. Have a blessed day. Be safe. Be well.
You too. My pleasure. Thank you. God bless.
Thank you. Thank you all for listening. Tune in tomorrow. This has been G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. Be well, be safe, and please remember, all real power comes from God. Take care.